Desert Healthcare District and Foundation presents a podcast that supports your health and wellness where you live. This is Healthy Desert, Healthy You, hosted by Will Dean. Now, here's Will.
Hello, friends. My guest today is Luz Gallegos, who is Executive Director of Todec Legal Center in the Coachella Valley and Inland Empire of Southern California. Todec has been serving immigrants and their families for more than 40 years. On Todec's website, which is todec.org, the center is described as a hub for healing, organizing, advocacy, and community transformation led by the people who live and work in rural, inland communities. Welcome, Luz.
Hello, Will. Thank you for having me.
I am so glad you are here, and I definitely want to talk to you about what's going on in terms of ICE in the Coachella Valley, but I want to first give our listeners and viewers an understanding of Todec's purpose over the decades before ICE became such a major issue. What were the most common challenges and issues that residents would bring to Todec?
Well, you know, Will, in reality, immigration enforcement is not new to us in the region. As you are well aware, Coachella Valley all the way to the Mexicali, which is the border, and Paris, where we were founded, all the way to TJ, with Tijuana, were border regions. So in reality, immigration enforcement has always been an issue. It's now, of course, it's been it's at a different level that we have been used to. But in reality, immigration enforcement has always been an issue. That's why Todec was founded in the 80s with the intention to organize and advocate and elevate the struggle and realities of farm workers and immigrants in our inland region, and especially border regions. As you're aware, I always share this story because it kind of gives a snapshot to what we lived through as kids growing up in these communities. I remember back in the day when my parents were working in the fields, and it was a very unique and very similar struggle to what we're living in now. Of course, now we have different laws that actually protect California workers that we didn't have back then. I remember when the farmers didn't want to pay our parents, they would just literally call Border Patrol. They were already in our streets. They would come and deport our parents. Of course, back then it was easier to come back in. But now it's not the same reality, right? We are seeing how our community continues to be targeted. It continues to be criminalized. And if you ask any of the workers, all what's on their mind is they just want to work. They're not criminals. The only sin is working, that they want to work and migrating to the states for better opportunities for their kids and their families and to contribute to our state's economy and our country's economy. But those are the foundations, the pillars, and the challenge and the struggle, how why Todec was founded back in the 80s, because of these realities of many farm workers and immigrants in the region that being a border region, having Border Patrol in our streets all the time, we see them all the time. And we see Border Patrol, especially here in Coachella Valley, where we have a Border Patrol station here in Indio. So it's been very common, but the work that they did before is very different now. They have different orders, right, from their upper ups. So in reality, that's why, Todec was founded, to organize workers and to organize immigrants in the region.
Right, yeah. Thank you. Thank you, Luz, for clarifying that. So, well, it definitely has intensified the ICE presence and during the past year. How would you say the intensification of that, the fear of living, that people are living with, of being detained, of being deported, regardless of their legal status, how has that changed the community that you've known all your life? How is it different?
It is very different, because it's now really targeting anyone that is of a certain color, that speaks of a certain language or works at a certain industry or stands with vulnerable populations. So the reality and the struggle have definitely continued to impact not only vulnerable populations, but anybody that has a similar mindsets, you know, of standing with immigrants or even people, even our community, you know, any of us that have a certain color that work in a certain industry. So in reality, these situations are really hurting our community. I know early on in January 2025, community, you know, started reaching out to us and asking what's going to happen. You know, we are hearing about the increased enforcement. What are we going to do? And we're like, we're going to do what we always do, hold on to our constitutional rights and make sure we're implementing them and make sure our families are aware of our constitutional rights from kids to elders, from elders to kids, because this is a reality. You know, we have mixed status families throughout the Coachella Valley that live in fear. U.S. born kids, you know, mixed parents, one being a U.S. citizen, one being vulnerable, and vice versa. So in reality, the struggle is very real. What we have seen is that the insecurity, the impact on the safety net, which is the only safety net that immigrants have, especially vulnerable populations, is their jobs. But when jobs get impacted, so does their well-being. So what we're seeing is when the whole operation started, since January 2025, we started seeing the increased fear, right, of what was going to happen, because they couldn't see Border Patrol agents that they knew living in Coachella Valley, that were used to seeing them at the coffee shops, seeing them at the gas stations, at the restaurants. You know, were they still going to act the same how they have been? So these were the challenges that community was going through, and us as a organization that promotes prevention, you know, promotes community education. We, you know, continue doing the Know Your Rights, family planning, making sure how to utilize the red card and how it's an actual tool that has saved community members. But right now we're seeing a different reality, that although community members know their rights and standing up for their constitutional rights, but we're seeing how some these constitutional rights, you know, they're not holding up for community. So there's definitely a lot of fear, a lot of insecurity, a lot of trauma that we have continue to see and document. Especially with vulnerable populations, you know, when community hears that immigration's out in our streets, what do? Stay home. Their only safe place is their home. And they struggle with rent to keep their home. When a worker doesn't go to work and misses work for one day, it impacts their entire ecosystem, their well-being as a family, their mental health. It impacts their mental health. It impacts their food supply. You know, when we since January, you know, community members, because of the fear of that the kids were having, we had families share that the kids didn't want them to leave their home because they were scared that if they would leave their home to work and they would go to school, they wouldn't see their parents, fearing family separation. So some families, you know, opted to stay home. And what did that do for families? You know, there's no revenue coming in. You know, when we see a workforce that is contributing to the economy with their work, with taxes, with their payroll taxes that are being reduced from their paychecks, and they don't see any of those benefits, when they can't even tap into unemployment benefits when they're not working. Why? Because they don't have an immigration status, they don't have a Social Security card. So these are issues that are very real, that we know as an organization, when a vulnerable resident doesn't have access to jobs, to their job or any income, it impacts severely their well-being. Why? Because they cannot pay the rent. So now they're struggling. You know, they're going through a mental trauma that, you know, how am I going to pay the rent? How am I going to feed my kids? You know, if I go out to the streets. So these are real, very layered conditions that our workers and their families are living through.
Yeah, absolutely. So when you talk about not being able to earn an income that supports their families, that you're absolutely right. That also impacts our community. Something that you mentioned that I want you to explain to our viewers and listeners, you mentioned the red card. That is a credit card size red card that actually lists people's rights. Is that right?
Yes. So the red card has been around for many years. You know, amongst our world of immigrant justice, we know that our Constitution has kept our community sane and safe for many years, that knowing their rights, their constitutional rights, they have continuously saved their well-being and their safety in this country. So the red card is basically, it's a wallet size, like you mentioned, and it states the constitutional rights, you know, the Fourth Amendment. You know, the Fifth Amendment, you have the right to remain silent. You have the right not to open the door if they don't have a warrant, a search warrant signed by a federal judge, you know. So it reminds community members, because when you're in a situation that you get stopped by immigration or they're coming to your home, even though, you know, they've been taught their constitutional rights, you know, they go blank. So the red card has been a tool for many years that we should all carry in our wallet, because it protects us for any law enforcement. It's basically our constitutional rights, that if a community member doesn't know the language or chooses just to remain silent, they could hand it over to the agent or the police officer or law enforcement agencies and says, I have the right to remain silent. And it just basically explains what constitutional rights are they're wishing to exercise at that point. And it's both in English and Spanish. It's a double-sided card. So when since January 2025, we mass printed red cards so we could disperse not only to community members, but to our partners, to school districts, to clinics, that we said, we have them, order them on our website, and we'll ship them to you or pick them up at any of our offices. So we've dispersed over 2.5 million red cards in the entire region to school districts, to clinics, to businesses, to any partner and community members. And it's a simple way to protect the well-being, but it's not, we explain to community, it's a tool, and we need to know how to exercise and implement this tool. But when a community is confronted by law enforcement and they're nervous, they forget their rights, so they could just hand over their tool, and the officer they're telling the officer, I'm wishing to exercise my constitutional rights. But now we did see at the beginning of the year of 2025, they were respecting the red cards. We got a lot of feedback from workers in the Coachella Valley coming in. Oh, I come for more so I could pass out to my co-workers because it worked. I got stopped and I exercised my constitution. And they said, you're free to go. But what's happened fast forward, the rights are not being respected. So at the same time, that's why it's important for a community to continue implementing their rights and knowing how to document incidents. Because when constitutional rights are not respected, those are administrative errors that could provide consequences for law enforcement agencies.
Right. So when that happens, Liz, and someone's rights are not respected, not honored, what should they do then?
Definitely, what we tell community is remember everything. Remember, look for badges, look for times, look for any identifiable information, the time, the date, location, how many agents, because when there's administrative errors, community members could file claims of incidents that their rights were not respected. And that's why the DOJ's offices, not only in the state, exists, right, to file these when community members' constitutional rights are not respected. But then it comes along with a lot of documentation, you know. Even within our rights, we have the right to document incidents, of course not interfering with operations, but you have the right to record, you have the right to take pictures, as long as you're not causing any type of friction with the operation, you're not conflicting with the operation, but you could or from a distance. And you could document everything that's happening from a distance. And that's why we continue to see a lot of community members that are, you know, trying to help document everything, because all of these, it's just proof, you know, it's just proof of different incidents. So that's why documentation is important. But when community members don't have access, or they're themselves are in a situation, it's important to remember all of anything that identifiable from agents, if they have badges, if what kind of vehicles they are, or anything that they could remember, how many agents, because these are documentations that they do in their mind and then write them down, or if there's other community members. This could come a long way if there's incidents that they're a person that's being detained and their constitutional rights are not being respected.
Right. So, Liz, one thing that you mentioned earlier that I would like to talk more about, and that is the behavioral health or mental health impact of living with this fear. You mentioned about children not wanting their parents to leave home or to leave home themselves to go to school. So does TODEC offer any sort of behavioral health service, or are you partnered with other community organizations that do that?
Yes. So at TODEC, we offer an array of programming and services to help immigrants. But what we also do, we have a network of partners. Us ourselves, we're not a mental health providers, but we do have partners that are. So within our response here in the Coachella Valley and throughout the region, we have a network of partners that when a community member calls our 24/7 hotline, if in case they got impacted, or family member, they're trying to find them, they don't know if they got detained, they could call our 24/7 hotline, and our call center helps them find the person, the family member, or connects them to any of our staff attorneys that are on call that for that day, and connects them directly to legal support. But what we also do, we have caseworkers within our programming, and the impacted families are connected to a caseworker, and the caseworker are the ones that are doing the intake to do the intake and evaluate the needs of the families, if they need housing, if they need any type of assistance, if they need mental health assistance, if they need access to any type of benefit that they may qualify. We have a network that, if we don't have it in-house, we have so many partners here in the Coachella Valley and throughout the region that we're all working together to kind of cross-refer to each other and connecting them to mental health services. But I do want to say, Will, and this is something that's very important, is that what we have documented since January 2025 till now, especially contacting our partners as we are referring community members to them, what they continue to share is that many community members don't show up to their appointments. And when we follow up with them, the community members say, I don't feel safe to leave my house, or I don't want to give my personal information. So that's why we have been really advocating and saying that during the pandemic, we had a pandemic that we had to respond, and in a different way that was virtual, right? And right now, with all the crisis that we're living, we are seeing a community pandemic, that it might not be COVID, but it's operations that are really targeting the well-being of our families, that they are fear even accessing any benefits, just how we saw during the pandemic when a community member who was even scared to have any access to benefits or healthcare because of public charge, we're reliving that pandemic, but in a very different way that's really impacting vulnerable populations that don't have access to any type of safety net program. Their only safety net program is their jobs. And right now we are advocating that service providers, especially those that are providing mental health services, do telehealth, because at telehealth, you know, community members don't feel exposed. They could do it from the safety net of their home or wherever they feel safe. But then again, to be very conscious of the realities that our communities are living in, as far as providing personal information or identifiable information that could put them at risk. As you know, with all the information that has been out there of public, state, federal agencies that, you know, have been asked to share identifiable information, community members that are vulnerable are thinking twice to seek any assistance, especially health or mental health assistance. And this is real. So as a community, as a state, as a systems, we need to understand the vulnerability of our families, that they don't trust just anybody. You know, that's why we have to shift and pivot to the needs of the population as we continue to live through this crisis, because we are in a crisis. We're in a pandemic that it should be treated as a pandemic and meet community where they're at, because we have documented suicides. You know, amongst our culture, you know, mental health is really...
It's stigmatized.
It's very stigmatized, right? You know, people don't want to expose themselves and think, oh, I'm not crazy. I don't need mental health. I don't need a psychologist. But what we need to continue educating community that, you know, the symptoms of mental health, it's not just in your head. It's the way you're not eating, you're not sleeping, you know, anxiety. These are the symptoms that not only we need to continue educating community, but we need to educate our health systems. Because when a community member is not aware of these symptoms, the first thing they think is that they're sick, that something's going on with their body. And we've had situations where community members have sought health medical assistance, and they've been written off because they said, oh, we ran blood work and you're fine, you're healthy, just, you know, maybe you need supplements. But we need to ask those questions. There needs to be more follow-up in the questions, and that's something that we need to reform the way the doctors and the nurses or in our medical providers are talking to communities, and not only people of color, anyone, because there's so much trauma amongst anybody, communities at risk, you know, even people that stand with vulnerable populations, you know, they're going through a lot of stress as well, just thinking of others, you know, but at the same time, you know, with the suicides that were shared with us by community members, it's very heavy, you know, listening to these stories. And that gives us as an organization a conscience that we need to continue elevating these stories to educate those in power, to educate systems like our health system, that we need to be nimble. The same way we were nimble during all the different pandemics and crises and disasters, we need to be nimble now more than ever to meet community where they're at and to create systems that really address the needs and meet community where they're at. If they don't want to give their information, we shouldn't ask. We should be caring of the well-being of that human so they could be alive and healthy.
Okay, right. Thank you, Liz. I really appreciate the analogy of a pandemic, because that makes it very clear that we all are affected by this, whether we know it or not, whether it's at an economic level, whether it's at the workforce level. Everyone in the Valley is affected by this. And I wanted to ask you about something I saw on the TODEC website, TODEC.org. And there was a statement, a declaration that I hope you'll share the meaning of it. And that was, love will win. What does that mean to you in the context of what's going on?
You know, with the work that we do at the organization and the hundreds of volunteers that are involved with us and so many partners like you all, you know, we are living this crisis with the community. We hear their stories, you know, we hear their struggle. And for them, they have their own individual story that they're living, and it's heavy on their chest and their mind and their hearts and their body. But for us, we hear their stories, all their stories. So we're like sponges, right? So for us, it creates that consciousness that we need to do more. But in this time that we feel sometimes so impotent that we can't change the minds of those in power to create empathy and consciences and create compassion, that our job is to elevate the stories, to create systems and bring resources. But when that we can't do that, and we're not seeing the stories of struggle, like families that their kids committed suicides. For us, it's heavy. But then when we hear, when we have so many people of good heart, like I could share you, I'm here in our Paris office. We receive hundreds of mail saying, encouraging, you know, letters of love and saying, thank you for the work that you do. And please share this drawing with the community. You know, it's bringing so many people across the country together, where sometimes we are so tired because we're working around the clock 24/7, you know, meeting community where they're at, listening to their stories, providing resources, legal, food, you know, groceries, you know, financial assistance, and all the work that we do for immigrants and farm workers in the region. It's heavy. It's very heavy, but when we have good partners and community members here in the Coachella Valley, so many residents in the Coachella Valley that have been stepping up. You know, Will, we started in January of 2025 when community was coming to us and saying, you know, our kids don't want us to leave their house. They don't want to go to school. We, you know, working with school districts to understand that the kids want to, you know, go to school virtually, kind of going back to the pandemic, because, and, you know, working with so many partners to make families safe. But then community was like, you know, we don't have food, and our caseworkers were connecting them to food banks, and our food banks, you know, doing the great job that they do. Community was not leaving their homes. And we're like, our communities going, you know, they're experiencing food insecurity. So what we decided to do is start grocery distribution to their work, to their home sites. So out of our donations and unrestricted money that we had, we started food distribution, and it continues to go, you know, function and operate, and dispersing food to their home sites of impacted families. And in March of 2025, we started this operation because we started seeing January, February, people were not going to food banks. So we started this operation with our unrestricted donations that come in, and providing food and groceries, and our volunteers dispersing. And in June of 2025, we ran out of resources. That's when we opened it up to community, said, this is what we've been doing underground, but we need your help. The amount of support here in the Coachella Valley and throughout the region, of people's like dropping off food and buying from our grocery list or donating to our website so we could continue buying in mass, in bulk. That's what we say love wins. Because in the time where we're seeing so much trauma, so much criminalization to community that just wants to work, that they just want to work to feed their families and have a home, we see so many people of good hearts stepping up in different ways, even stepping up. Sometimes they, you know, we get calls and they're like, we don't have money to donate, but we're going to pray for you, and we're going to pray for your community. And that's what we mean love, that love wins, and it will always win.
Right. Yeah. Yeah, that's definitely a great approach and response. When you think about all of the great leaders who led with love, like Dr. Martin Luther King Jr., Mahatma Gandhi, some religious teachings. So I really appreciate that. And the fact that you were talking about the community stepping up and donating food and donating funds through the website, I'm assuming that TODEC would appreciate more of that. What are the ways that the community can support TODEC and the important work that you're doing?
So there are so many ways. Of course, if they want to donate, buy from our grocery list. We have grocery lists that's culturally, you know, culturally for our community that we serve. But then, you know, community could also donate on our website. But then also, you know, they could also be a part of it. You know, if they want to volunteer, to be honest, right now we have more volunteer than resources. So as some of the volunteers like, we want to do, I'm like, well, we wish we had more resources. The demand continues to grow. So, you know, it's we continue to see the community step up, but you know, there's different ways, but also another way, you know, they could call their representatives, their state, local, you know, federal representatives, and share what they're seeing and how they want them to respond and what their priorities are. Another way, a call of action is, you know, making sure that community civically engaged, you know, that they're paying attention to what's happening. And it's always important to get out to vote, you know, different ways to secure different resources and all of that, but also prayer. You know, prayer goes a long way, and for us, our faith in our culture keeps us strong in the good times and the bad times. And right now, our faith is, we're holding on to that faith, and we're holding on to our constitutional rights. But at the same time, you know, something has to give. We're seeing how we're losing our state's most valuable asset. Either they're being detained, deported, they're disappeared, that, you know, families still can't find many of their loved ones, or they're deporting themselves, or they're committing suicide. So at the same time, we are hearing from, you know, different companies that they need workers. But, you know, the workers that want to work are vulnerable right now. So, you know, our hope is that, you know, that those in power will realize the contributions that our workforce, that immigrants bring, not only with their jobs, but with their taxes and contributions, culturally, economically contributions, and really value this workforce that, you know, they just want to work so they could keep their family safe and housed and fed, and that's all they care about if you ask any of them. But at the same time, you know, we are living through some very difficult times, but we are very hopeful. Our faith doesn't end, and we live with hope that things are going to get better. And we know through the history that justice sometimes takes a long time to show up. But when it shows up, it shows up. And that's what we're holding on to, because at the same time, we love our country, and we know that our constitutional rights remain. But at the same time, we are seeing how we're losing so many community members and their families and kids. And it's just heavy. It's heavy times. You know, it's heavy times, but we're grateful for all the love and support we continue to receive for so many community members that we never came across, you know, from different paths of lives, you know, stepping up and saying, I feel for your community. And sometimes that's all you need. You need those types of words to keep on moving forward. And we know that we're in the right path, because we're helping vulnerable populations with their most immediate needs, you know, but at the same time, the demand is growing and will continue to grow. And the resources are very limited.
Right. So Liz, I've known you for a while. Totec has been a great partner to the Desert Healthcare District and grantee during our COVID-19 response. And so I know you've been doing this work in the community for such a long time. It's such challenging work, especially now. How do you keep going? How do you motivate yourself to do this every day?
Although we are working like nonstop, I'm always full of energy, because when you love what you do, it's not a job, right? It's a lifestyle that you enjoy. And for me, what brings me energy and keeps me going is knowing that we're doing something good for a community. The community that I saw growing up, I saw myself and these kids and living through that trauma, and knowing that, you know, sometimes we need to suffer in order to value what we have. And we know that our community is going through so much, and we're all going through so much pain with them. But we know that justice is going to show up. And, you know, that motivates me. My faith motivates me. My family motivates me. Community motivates me, because they're our engine. They're the engine and the gas that gear our work. and that gear our conscience. And that's what we want to continue creating, a community conscience amongst our young generation. So this work continues, that it's continues, and there's continuity to the work within our future generations. And, you know, amongst our youth programming, we are seeing how so many youth, you know, are stepping up and saying, you know, they're impacted themselves, or their peers are impacted, their neighbors, but they're not, they're stepping up as well, you know, volunteering and being part of the programming of the movement. But the struggle continues, you know, the struggle continues, and it's not the first time and it won't be the last, but we could have to continue working together, you know, together for this vulnerable population that needs us. And that's what, you know, that's what keeps me going.
Absolutely. All right. Liz, thank you for the work that you and your team do in the Coachella Valley and the Inland Empire. It's definitely needed and appreciated. And for all of our listeners and viewers, community definitely makes a difference. You can make a positive difference, as Liz suggested, by writing your legislators, by donating food, by donating funds, by visiting TODEC's website, which is TODEC.org. Thank you, Liz.
Thank you. Bye.
Thank you for joining us on this episode of Healthy Desert, Healthy You. This podcast is a production of the Desert Healthcare District and Foundation in Palm Springs, California. For more information, please visit the website DHCD.org. Our annual conference site is HealthyDesertHealthyYou.com. This podcast is available at most major podcast portals, including Amazon Music, Apple Podcasts, Audible, Captivate.fm, Spotify, and YouTube Music. Thanks for listening. Be sure to subscribe.